It's Sunny J.
Hello.
But you've had a really interesting career. So this is what today's about. We're going to dig into it.
You could tell Simon was quite excited. Alicia at the time was like breath of fresh air, all that sort of stuff.
You had the whole jargon, didn't you?
We really did. Quintessentially British was another quote that we had.
It is so competitive. It's a very small industry. I know you were saying earlier about politics in music. It's kind of every industry in entertainment, I think, has the same.
For sure.
I remember being told, you know, in order for someone to come up, someone has to come out. And I was like, wow, okay. It's a really different way of doing things.
I was sleeping in the TV room at Capitol for an hour and then waking up and then doing the breakfast show. There was a time when I was doing 5 days a week overnights, 5 days a week breakfast, sleeping an hour in between all of them. And my boss at the time, Greg, said to me, we've got to stop this. Do you want to be part of the breakfast show? And I was like, of course I do. Danielle and I, we went on a night out once and we were just like, should we just give it a go?
Wait, so you went on a night out and thought, let's make a baby?
We were just like, should we just see what happens?
So we all know how that night ended. Were you drunk?
Yeah, of course we were.
Welcome back to another episode of Manage Podcast. And today I have a very special guest because I am part of his Stan fan club. It's Sunny J.
Hello.
Hello.
I thought I was never going to get the call up, I'm going to be honest.
No, you must know I'm like your biggest fan. I literally think you're fantastic.
Well, yeah, thank you. I do appreciate that. I'm a big fan of you guys as well.
No,
you know that.
It's been really nice. Like, how long have you roughly been managed by us now?
I think our initial conversation was the start of this year, so the start of 2025. Mm. I think it was, what, January we first started talking and then signed in March, I want to say?
Yeah, no, it was really like a little process. I remember having the conversation with the girls here. I was like, we've got a meeting with Sunny J and everyone was so excited. But you've had a really interesting career. So this is what today's about.
Yeah.
We're going to dig into it.
Yeah. It's weird when you say that because when I look back, like it's been, I've not had a proper job. Like when anyone asks, they always say like, oh, like how long have you been doing this for? And I'm like, I've not, since the age of 17, I've not really, my job before what I first started doing, I was behind a bar.
At 17? Different rules back then. Can't get away with that now.
No.
So you started on Britain's Got Talent.
Yes. So there was three of us that met at college. Mm-hmm. And we were at a performing arts college and we were the three in our year that just, we were into performing arts, but weren't like dancers.
Yeah, yeah.
So we all ended up just missing like auditions for the shows that were like dancing. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, you're never going to get that part. Just don't even bother. Just go off and do something else. We just all thought we'd bring instruments in one day and we were like, well, I play the ukulele.
Did you?
Literally, as you do. And we just ended up writing songs together and just doing that sort of thing. And then we were like, guys, are we in a band? And it just naturally happened from there. We just thought, well, let's just see what happens with this. So we were gigging, just doing rubbish gigs. We did like a couple of gigs where people would bring like bins out on stage while we were doing performance, you know, all that sort of stuff. And we got approached because we were putting YouTube videos out, just doing covers. I think there was one in particular that was Ed Sheeran. Mm. And it was when he first released the 18. Mm. And we were like, we've got to do a cover of it. Like, if any song feels like us right now, it is that. So we put a cover out of it online. And then we got approached by a guy called Ben at ITV, who was like a producer for Britain's Got Talent. He was like, do you want to do it? And we were like, no, don't want to do it. We're too cool. What do you mean, want to do Britain's Got Talent? We just sung the A-Team on YouTube. Which are you talking to? And then I remember we sat in Eddie's mum's living room and we're like, guys, this is quite a big opportunity. Mm. And we then were like, look, if we do it, why don't we do it and sing our own songs? Mm. Like, no one's ever done that before. So then we went back to Ben, the producer at the time. We were like, look, we've really discussed whether we want to do this or not. We're not totally sure. But we thought if we were going to make the best of this situation for us, because we're cool. That's what we thought at the time.
I've seen pictures of you around that time.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd use the word cool, but you were like the epitome of what a boy band member would look like. It was giving One Direction when they first started.
Yeah, I'd say, I think the thing that worked for us was that we were all quite unique in our own way. Like, there was three of us, you know, Tay had such a soulful voice. He was the, like, we were all the singers, but he was the singer. He would just wow people with his beautiful vocals. Eddie was the rugged one with the beard, and I was the clean-cut one with the shaved hair. And like, do you know what I mean? I don't know. It was just one of those sort of, it just felt like it worked because we're all so unique and different. And we went back to Ben at the time and we're like, we'll do it if we can sing our own songs. And he was like, oh, no one's really done that before. Like, I'll put an ask in. And then we ended up at the, being able to do it. We auditioned for it. We wrote this song called Lovesick. And it was our audition song for Britain's Got Talent. No one had ever at the time performed their own music on Britain's Got Talent or X Factor.
Yeah.
And it was only the X Factor after we did it that Lucy Spraggan came on to
own.
Sing her own song. And it was just, it felt like a movement of all these people that they're trying to get now are sort of a bit cooler and less manufactured. And even though it still felt manufactured for those sort of shows, it was, I don't know, a bit of a movement at the time.
How did you come up with the name Lovable Rogues?
Well,
is it because you all felt lovable and a bit roguish?
Do you know what? What is a good name for a bat?
I don't know.
Wham. Someone sat in a meeting and went, I've got it. Wham.
It's true. I don't
it
know what...
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I don't, it's weird because I don't know what my band name would be.
No. We came up with some absolute, like, shitters. I'm going to be honest. There
you
were
didn't
like,
have ChatGPT then either, because no. I think I would ChatGPT it now.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a good option to do now. But at the time, we were just like, what makes a good band name? We just got to choose one and stick with it. And we really liked Only Fools and Horses, where everyone would refer to Del Boy as a lovable rogue. So the character of him, he was so lovable, yet he had a little bit of something to him, a little hustle to him. We ended up sticking with that.
I like that. And I like the backstory to it.
Yeah.
But obviously, I'm going to let you kind of do this with Grace when you have her on your podcast.
Yeah.
But Grace, who GK Barry, was a big fan of the Lovable Rogues. And you didn't know that until
no,
I told you.
Not at all. Didn't realise it at all. A big fan.
A big fan. I'm going to let you have that full exclusive on how big a fan she was for your pod, but she was a big fan.
Yeah.
Is that weird to hear that now?
A little bit, yeah. Like,
because she wasn't GK Barry back then,
no,
to be
of
fair.
Course. It's just funny because she must have been a big enough fan for, I think we ended up blocking her.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Fan stalker, I'm not sure, but yeah.
I'd like to think she wouldn't stalk, but maybe, unsure.
Yeah.
I will fact check the stalking.
We'll have to remove the restraining order on her first. So she can come and do my podcast. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So tell me about the process for anyone who doesn't know or has ever been on a show like BGT or X Factor. What is that process? Because I know some people have to audition before they get to the main auditions, but you obviously got approached and then you went through the process.
Yeah, we were really late to the party on the whole series. It was one of those where they were like, do you want to do it? We made a long song and dance out of it, not literally, but it was a case of we don't know, we're not sure. And then they said, look, if you want to do it, next week there's an audition in Wales. There's a slot available if you want it. So then we made the decision, we'll do it. And we actually went straight to the judges. And I don't think that's a normal scenario. I think people do go through producers and whatever first, film tapes. But we went straight to the judges and it just went quite well for us. Like you could tell Simon was quite excited. Alicia at the time was like, you guys are like, you're a bit different, a breath of fresh air, all that sort of stuff.
You had the whole jargon, didn't you?
We really did. Quintessentially British was another quote that we had.
It's on the CV.
It is on the CV. It's on my Instagram bio. It's not. But yeah, it was, I can see how you get swept up in it. It is a whirlwind. I mean, we were just discussing before, I was 17 when I went on that show and we came off of it. We came fourth. We lost to a dog.
That's a bit of a blow. A very talented dog.
Pudsey. Remember Pudsey?
I do remember Pudsey.
Yeah.
He was a talented dog.
Was, because he's not here anymore. What happens when you mess with me? I'm joking. Love Pudsey.
Love
Pudsey.
Pudsey. May he rest.
But that's going to go on my gravestone, lost to a dog.
Yeah. That's great. I quite like that. If you're going to lose to anything, a dog is quite up there.
Up there. Yeah. Fair enough. And I love dogs, so
yeah,
fair enough.
You do, because you've got dogs as well.
Got two dogs.
Yeah. It's fine to lose to a dog.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. Ish. Well, it was $500,000 prize at the time, so I would have been happy with that. But cool. Lost to a dog.
Actually some things happen for a reason, because a 17-year-old boy with £500,000 sounds like a recipe for disaster.
It would have been. Yeah.
So you wouldn't be where you are now, so it all worked out.
It's true. It's very, very true. I'm very, very grateful. But yeah, we came fourth on that show. And then I was 17 at the time, and we would sign to this like live agent that were like, boys, you're on the road for a week, so just pack your bags for a week. You're going to go do a load of like personal appearances and book you for a festival, this, that, whatever. And we're like, cool. Just packed our bags for a week. And then while we were on the road, they were like, oh, we booked another whatever gig. So we ended up staying on the road for about a month. You know, I was like, what about my pants? I'm going to have to buy some new pants. I've got my mum to wash them. It was just a whirlwind. Like, I was 17 and there was this whole discussion whether I should be doing club gigs or not, because obviously, you know, you've got to be over 18 to go to gigs. But then I just happened to turn 18 that month afterwards. So it was fine. But it is a whirlwind, man. Like, we came off and we were just, we signed to Psycho, Simon Cowell's record label. And we were like, we're going to be the next One Direction. Yeah. Like, this is it. Like, I can't see it going any other way. At the time, they had Little Mix. They had One Direction. They had all these massive names. And we were like, we're the ones. We're next, guys, rubbing our hands together.
Yeah.
But the problem was, is that there was a guy called Sonny Tacker, who was like Simon Cowell's right-hand man at the time. And when they dropped us from Psycho, they were like, we've learned from you. And I was like, fucking brilliant. Cheers. I'm glad I was the learning curve. But what it was is because no one else had gone onto those shows before and sung their own songs, they didn't know what the format of that was. Mm. I mean, in hindsight, we should have come off Britain's Got Talent and sung the song that we sung in our audition, which was Lovesick, and then released it straight away, because we were going to unis and they were singing the songs back to us. We were like, this is it. But because they've never done that before, they were trying to work out what it was. And for instance, the next Britain's Got Talent, there was a girl called Gabs who went on, who came second. She sung this song called Lighters, went to number one.
Yeah.
And that was the difference, because they learned from us that if you go on that show and sing that song in the audition, that's the people will love that. And then straight away, come off the show, release that track. But at the time, they'd never done it, so they didn't know.
So you guys sort of walked for others to run behind you in that sense.
Annoyingly, yeah.
Yeah, but someone's got to do it.
Someone has to.
When you say it was a whirlwind, obviously you were like 17, 18-year-old lads. Was like the fans crazy? Like, was it that sort of vibe?
A little bit, yeah. Like, it wasn't, don't get me wrong, it wasn't One Direction like level. It was just, we would go anywhere and it was chaos. It felt like there was just something that was swept underneath us. And I think it was the whole Psycho thing, the Simon Cowell thing. It was the excitement of everyone didn't know where we were going.
Yeah.
Little did they know that 5 minutes later that, you know. We had our 5 minutes. But it was, it was one of those exciting moments where everyone just felt like they had to be part of this thing that was us, because we went on this show, sung our own songs, signed to Simon Cowell. It was like, this is going to be beautiful. Little did we know that it would take a year to release a song, and the politics, you know, any industry, that was that. And we got a top 10. It just didn't go number one. And I think in Psycho's and Simon Cowell's eyes, that was to them a bit like, oh, what are we going to do with the next? So unfortunately, after that, we got dropped.
So sorry to hear that. But you have had a pivot. Have you ever had like a crazy fan experience? So like one that's ever stuck out, being like, that was mental.
A little bit. There's been a lot. Like always mad when came off the show and I'd go shopping in Bluewater with my mum, for instance. And, you know, there'd be people following me around. Bluewater at the time was mental. There was one girl in particular, I can't remember her name. She became like an actual stalker. And I think that was a moment for me where I was like, this is actually affecting my personal life, she found out where I lived.
And you were really young too, so it would have been a completely different thing to now of how you would handle something.
Absolutely. Like, this girl found out where I lived. And that to me, like, I'm a homebody. Like, I love being at home. And what I did as my career was separate, you know, and that felt to me like a bit of a violation. And I think it was actually one of the scariest moments that I was like, this girl found out where I lived. She followed me and my mum to go shopping one day, and I don't know what she wanted. It was really weird. Well, maybe. I mean, fucking hell, she's got a pair of eyes, isn't she? I'll show you. But she...
It's the fact that Luke, the producer in the corner, is just laughing at that.
He knows. He's got a pair of eyes, I know. I don't know what she wanted. It was just, to me, that was frightening part. It was like one of those moments where I was like, oh, this is the bad part of it, you know, this person found out where I lived and followed me, and it just felt uncomfortable. Yeah. But other than that, there's nothing mad. Like, we just had a great time.
Sounds like it. And you know, I was telling you this on the phone the other day, that for Grace's birthday, she thought that her partner was bringing back the Lovable Rogues for one night only for her birthday.
Yeah.
And she was so sad that that didn't happen. And I told you, we were both having a little giggle, but she was actually really sad about it. So maybe one day we'll do like a Make-A-Wish vibe for her.
For her?
Yeah, like maybe one day we could make
that
happen.
She needs a Make-A-Wish, does she?
From the Lovable Rogues. Yes.
Okay.
I think so.
To be fair, I did always say in the back of my head, like, I'm done with music because the music industry is just mad. But if I was ever to get back together, it would be for something like a charity or something like that. So if she was to donate a lot of money to charity, then maybe.
Absolutely. We can make that happen for sure.
Get your purse out, Grace.
I want to talk about the fact that you did a pivot that I haven't really seen many others do, which is you went onto radio.
Yeah.
What was that transition from musician to radio presenter? And like, how did that sort of come about?
So for me, it was, we did so many gigs. You know, we were very fortunate enough to play Wembley Stadium for Capital. We were like the breaking artists of the year. We came out from underneath the stage like NSYNC. It was unbelievable. Do you know when they get brought up on a lift?
Do you have to like crouch and then stand up?
We were one of those guys.
Wow.
We were like,
yeah, I would love to do that.
Yeah, I did it. It was on my bucket list and I did it. So we came out of Wembley Stadium and I remember being interviewed backstage and I just remember thinking, this seems like so much fun. If I wasn't doing what I'm doing now, I'd love to be doing this. And I always remembered that in the back of my head. And I think actually something, the most important thing that I've ever picked up in this industry is obviously, and I know you're very good at this, networking. That was a classic case of me work in a room a little bit and, you know, wowing, I guess, the people that were in charge of Capital. There was a guy called Mike at the time who used to get new people in for Capital for demos and all that sort of stuff. And I remember just speaking to him backstage and just said, look, you know, we don't know what's going to happen, whatever, but I would love to be doing this. You know, it looks like a really good, fun job. And I didn't speak to him for about a year or so afterwards. And then, you know, lo and behold, we got dropped, all that sort of stuff. And I was like, oh, I'm going to see if that Mike's number works. I might text him and see if I can come in for a demo. And it did. And I was like, oh, great. And then he just basically got me in, did a demo. And he said, look, you're right, but you need to go away and get experience. So then I sort of went away to do local radio for a year and then came back.
All good.
Just hit the mic. God, you wouldn't think I'm in radio, would you? Oh, God. Rule 101, don't hit the mic. Yeah, I went away, did local radio for a bit and then came back to him. And then thankfully at the time, they were looking for a new presenter and I just happened to be right place, right time, which was really handy.
Yeah, because I think, you know, from working with radio for a little bit now, obviously we have people across Radio 1 and Capital. Obviously we speak to about you and Isra, who does like cover.
Yes.
And it is so competitive. It's a very small industry. It's a very like, everyone knows everything that's going on.
Yeah.
It's a very different dynamic. And I think, I know you were saying earlier about politics in music, it's kind of every industry in entertainment, I think, has the same.
For sure.
And I remember being told, you know, in order for someone to come up, someone has to come out. And I was like, wow, okay, it's a really different way of doing things. So when you started with Capital, what was your first role there?
So my first role was overnights. So I used to do 1 till 4 in the morning. But I didn't, so just to explain that, I first started doing that. They sent me for a couple of weeks to the South Coast to just do a couple of weeks on air, see how you get on. It was still overnight, still live. It was just like, if you mess up, you're in the South Coast, no one really hear you. And then I was doing that for a little bit. And then there was this talk of this new breakfast show coming to Capital. And I ended up demoing for it. They were just trying everyone to demo for this new breakfast show. And it was with Roman Kemp and Vic Hope at the time. And they said, do you want to demo for it? I was like, yeah, of course I do. So I started demoing for it. They were like, oh, this works. Like, sounds quite good. I was like, whatever, still doing overnights. And then the breakfast show started with Roman and Vic. So I was like, oh, I didn't get that, whatever. And then there was chats around, because they liked me so much at the time, would I be up for doing a couple of days here and there where they send me out as like a street boy, you know, going into town. Well, do you know what I mean?
Vox popper vibe.
Yeah.
I don't know, street boy is the right one.
I'm quite the opposite from a street boy, aren't I? To just go do Vox pops in London, you know, Wimbledon was on and this, that, whatever. Would you be up for doing it? And I was like, yeah, of course. It was a breakfast show. I was like, of course I would. And then it was probably like once a week they used me. And then it became twice a week. But then it was like, I was still doing overnight. So I was doing 1 till 4 in the morning and then 6 till 10 doing breakfast show.
When did you sleep?
Well, this is it. So this is where graft comes in, because I was doing 1 till 4 in the morning, and then I was sleeping in the TV room at Capital for an hour, and then waking up and then doing the breakfast show. And I did it for, there was a time when I was doing 5 days a week overnights, 5 days a week breakfast, sleeping an hour in between all of them. And my boss at the time, Greg, said to me, "We've got to stop this. Do you want to be part of the breakfast show?" And I was like, "Of course I do." So then that was the moment where it was like, right, you're not on overnights anymore. You're now on Capital Breakfast. And that was a London show at the time. And then it went national. Mm. Yeah. And then I did it for 6 years. So that was 6 years, 4 AMers.
It's crazy because I remember seeing your face plastered around like all the billboards.
Yeah, buses.
And we, as an agency, we weren't really big then. So I think for me, it was a full circle when you came over to us. But how did you find the breakfast show? Obviously, I know people who've done the breakfast show, and it is, their description is always, if you do the breakfast show, you have to love radio and the medium, because it, you don't have the same social life. You're getting up at like 4 a.m. to come. What did you start at 4, or did you have to get up at 4?
I got up at 4, started at 6.
So, but it's hard, and that's not a natural time for people to wake up.
No.
And do you now struggle to wake up at a normal time, or did you just bounce back?
I bounced back. I went from doing breakfast to the complete opposite. You know, when I left the breakfast show, I then was lucky enough to have a bit of time off, like a month in between, and then go straight into doing the late show, which is the complete opposite time of the day.
Yeah.
But I did just go back to, I didn't wake up at 4 a.m. or 5 a.m.
Why did you leave the breakfast show?
So I left the breakfast show because Roman told me, this is news to people that who I work with, but he knew he was leaving, basically. He knew his contract was up. He knew he wasn't going to renew it. And he basically said to me, "You need to leave," which is when my contract was up. "Do it, because I'm not going to be here for another year." Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was one of those decisions where I was like, "Oh, hang on, but what if they get someone new and then I stay on the breakfast show? Or what if..." Do you know what I mean? It was one of those moments, and I just thought, I have to...
Yeah.
Because he gave me the heads up, which I'm so pleased I did, because it reminded me of why I got into radio in the first place, which was to become a solo presenter and to do that. It's just that I got swept up in this breakfast thing that happened, which went really well.
It is most people's dream job in radio. So it's interesting that you got the dream job quite quickly.
Yeah.
And then you realize, actually, I want to be solo, because I guess it was probably more Roman show.
Well, it was, yeah.
You know, and then he had his two co-hosts.
For sure.
So now it's like Sonny J's show.
Yeah. And I think that's what excites me. Yeah. And it's like, you know, there's no one else to bounce off of now. Whatever radio I make is down to me and my producer. And it's like, I want to put out great stuff. You know, I enjoy doing radio, and I remember moments from growing up, what those moments were that I was excited by when I went to school, you know, that listen between home and school, what excited me. And it was Music Passion. I'll never forget Johnny Vaughan in the morning introducing me to Gnarls Barkley Crazy.
Oh my God, I remember that song.
Yeah. And I went to school and I was singing it all day, and I was like, I can't remember who the guy was called. What is his name? Gnarls something. Couldn't remember how it went. But that to me was a pivotal moment of something, that someone introduced me to new music, and I was like, this is great. And now I'm that person for someone else, you know.
Which is really nice.
Yeah.
What radio did you used to listen to when you were growing up?
So growing up was Capital. I listened to Chris Tarrant, Johnny Vaughan, Dave Berry. But then also...
Oh my God, I remember Dave Berry back in the day.
Ricky Melvin and Charlie, man.
Yeah, that's what I used to listen to.
For me, they were, especially doing the breakfast show with Roman and Vic, definitely an example of what a great breakfast show could be. They weren't, you know, they didn't have the massive billboards everywhere. They were just, because they had such a good connection and were so likable or lovable. They were just so relatable.
What? Don't just make me laugh. Carry on.
They were just so relatable, and they were the perfect example of a good chemistry in radio. And everyone will always try and recreate what Ricky and Melvin and Charlie still have, because it's rare that you can put three people in a room together, especially, you know, you see loads of people being tried to put together to make a connection, strangers.
Yeah.
They are a perfect example of what a trio on a breakfast show should be.
Yeah. And I think obviously me and you have experienced that in the last sort of year of people being put together.
Yeah.
And like things we've watched happen. Do you think there is an opportunity for that to be recreated in radio as it stands.
I always think there's definitely room for that to be recreated. Yeah, for sure. It's just, these big companies bank on just being able to go, right, they will go together, they're big names. It doesn't work like that. There has to be, I can't even tell you what it is, that it really worked. I'd say a good example for Roman, Sean and myself, it really worked for us as a breakfast show. Because
I used to listen to your breakfast show. Yeah. I loved your breakfast show.
It just worked. And it, you know, we did demo with a load of other people because Sean came in and replaced Vic. And we did try with loads of people, but there was something about Sean at the time, and still is now because she still does it, that just felt for us just warm and brought Roman and I together more. Mm-hmm. And it just, when it works, you know, and yeah. You can't always recreate it. But I think people just think they can put anyone together and go, yeah, that's going to work. But actually, the longevity of it doesn't. Yeah. You know?
One of the things I love about radio is people know your voice more than you. And so it's like a weird level of celebrity because it's not, you know, a movie star in the same way, but people will know your voice before they, and then they'll be like, oh, wait, I know you. I don't know. And it's trying to put it all together. Obviously, you have done TV too because you did Dancing on Ice.
Yeah.
How did you find that?
An experience. Like, it was an experience. Like, I went on there not ice skate. I never knew how to ice skate and then came off of it and was ice skating backwards.
Which is mental. It's do you think when you came off of it, people then recognized you? I guess with Global, it's a different power because you, like I said, I see on the side of buses, big billboards. So I think with Global, they do a big thing with their breakfast show where you do know faces and you feel like you know them as people.
Yeah, I think I was really lucky at the time. It came around during COVID. Mm. I got a phone call on a Friday to ask if I wanted to go to audition for it on Monday.
Yeah.
And I was like, out of all the shows, I just don't think that's the one that I'm going to be, you know, worth doing. To me, it's a big ask. And I thought, you know what? As the whole of my career that I ever have, I've gone, let's just go do it. And then if anything comes of it, we can always say no. That's what I've always, in my head, that's always what I say. You know, go do a good job at something. And if they want you, then that's a great position to be in, or not a great one because you've got to make a decision. But it's still, if people want you, then it's great.
It's better to say no than to have not tried.
It would annoy me more for not trying.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I did go for it and ended up, they said they wanted me to do it. But at the time I was doing the breakfast show. So it was during COVID where everyone was staying at home. I was lucky enough to be able to go to work in the morning on radio and then leave and then go to do a bit of ice skating for a while. And then I can't believe I won it.
I can't actually. No, I actually think Jason Donovan. I forgot about that.
Have some of that.
You what? So you're that. Wait, can you do like the jumps and did you lift people in the air?
Lifted. Yeah. Did it all. I've not been since. So I couldn't tell you if I can.
You can't throw around Danielle on the ice rink anymore.
I think it'd be her worst nightmare.
Yeah. So let's go on to that. So people, like I said, people really feel that they know you. Well, I guess they do, right?
Yeah.
You are welcomed into someone's home every day, which is such a privilege, right?
Yeah.
And like I said, it's a very intimate medium, radio. So for you, it must have been a really lovely experience for people to watch you become a dad, fall in love. And I would love to kind of speak to you a little bit more about that. And how did you meet Danielle?
So Danielle and I have a mutual friend, which is incredible because I know obviously a lot of people meet online nowadays or whatever, or in person.
I'm quite really anti that, you know.
Online.
For me, personally.
Yeah, like for me, I did join like a couple of things.
Nothing came of it.
Yeah, but nothing came. I just don't know how you can meet someone based on a text. Like that to me was mental.
It's all like a physical
and a picture. Anyway. I got set up on a date with Danielle through a mutual friend, someone who I used to go to college with, who she knew as well. And he messaged me and was like, you guys would get on really well. Like, you should definitely go on a date together. So I messaged her in September, started chatting. Then she aired me for a month. Pied me, ghosted me, whatever you want to call it. And then I put a bit of graft in December towards the end of the year. And I was like, I'm going to go on a date with this girl in January. And who goes on a date in January?
I did that too.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you? All right. Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe you should date in January because it fucking works.
It does. It does work.
No one's got anything to do in January.
It's because you finished the Christmas holidays. Everyone feels refreshed and you're like, you know what? I'll give something a try that I wouldn't usually.
Yes.
You know. Yeah. Were you anti-dating before that?
I wasn't anti-dating. Before Danielle, I was in a long relationship before that. And then I was dating here and there, but nothing. I wasn't anti it. I just, I was so focused because at the time in January, I knew that I was starting my new late show.
Yeah.
So I was like so focused on that. And I was like trying to, you know, go to the gym. I was just trying to focus on me. And then it just so happens that Danielle entered my life as well. And it didn't feel like she was taken away from what I wanted to do. It just felt like she was there. She was doing her own thing and I was doing mine, you know?
I speak quite openly about this on LinkedIn of how important it is if you are someone who's very driven and successful and the importance of finding a partner who helps lift you.
For sure.
For your, in your experience, what does that look like to you? What is it about Danielle that really stood out to you as helping you grow in your career?
I think it's a good question. I've been part of a relationship. I've been in a relationship where I've had the opposite, where I felt like I was giving more and doing a lot. And I felt like there was moments where, because the person I was once with, you know, was also trying to do something, not similar industry, but, you know, she was trying to do music and I was trying to, I was already doing radio and all that sort of stuff. I think there becomes like this bit of, I don't know, not competition, but because it's not, but it just felt like, I don't know. I can't explain it.
I think your partner needs to be your biggest fan and vice versa. If he doesn't feel like that, it feels off.
Totally. And with Danielle, like I said, she came around at a time when I was truly just focusing on myself. She was focusing on herself. And we just went on this date to see if it, you know, anything would come of it. And it did. And even after that, you know, months after, it still felt like I could focus on me. She could focus on her. And I think it's just being supportive without being too involved. I don't know.
No, I think it's true. I really like, for me, I can only speak for me personally, and watching, I guess, some of my friends who I think have really successful relationships and have really amazing careers, is they have their life, their partner has their life, and then you have a life together.
Totally.
And I think it's important to have your own separation to it as well.
Absolutely.
Especially when it comes to work. But, you know, I know there's obviously things where that might not be the same. Do you think the fact that Danielle was working in entertainment in a different way, she's an influencer, helped with that because she understands the pressures but in a different way?
Yeah, I think so. I think it'd be harder if I met someone who would be in a 9-to-5 and didn't understand my industry, didn't understand that I had to go out on a Thursday night before I had to go do my radio show because I had to network, or I had to, like, I think there's always moments where you go, I have to leave my house to go do this because I think it might be beneficial in the long run.
Yeah.
That's not earning money. That's investing time to potentially earn money. And Danielle understands that because she does it too. She's one of the best networkers who has kept a portfolio of PRs that still send her work, still send her products, still send, like...
I heard you get to break those down.
Oh, the boxes?
Yeah.
Yeah, the amount of products we get sent to the house is unbearable. But it's her job and I support her in it and I'll moan at her about it, but...
Unbearable is crazy. But we get them here. We get them here. Our recycling bin has to get changed. Like, it used to be weekly. No. It's not like that.
Yeah, but I have to go to the recycling point. Mine doesn't fit in the boxes of the bins. I have to actually physically go to take the boxes because there's too many. But it's a lovely problem to have. First world problems and all that. But that is her job. And I support her in that. And even if I have a little moan about the boxes that don't get flattened, you should flatten your boxes if you get some.
It sounds like you've really, it's quite personal. You know, like when it really like hits different.
It does hit different. But listen, I support her so much because... you know, she's incredible at what she does. But then also I get to see her be a mum and to, she, I don't know, that, you know, you're saying how you have different things and then you come together. Mm. I now make conscious choices of jobs and work that I get, and everything always has to be worth me leaving my house and leaving my child and leaving my, you know, the love of my life.
Oh,
it has to be worth it
to
leave the house now, where before I'd be like, well, I'm off. I'm going to do this, that. Now I pick and choose based on what feels like home to me.
Speaking of that, you became a dad.
Yeah.
And you have the most beautiful baby girl.
I do.
I would love you to tell us about that experience.
Yeah.
And tell us about the experience of becoming a dad and how, like you said, you make conscious decisions.
Yeah.
How it affected your work life. And I guess, like, even down to, I know... your job's changed slightly because obviously social media is a big thing, but we work with baby brands for you, which is very different to what you would have done before.
Yeah. I mean, best experience ever having...
Highly recommend to others?
Highly recommend. Yeah. I mean, look, if you're lucky enough to be able to Absolutely. I mean, Danielle and I, it was one of those, we went on a night out once and we were just like, should we just see? Should we just give it a go?
Wait, so you went on a night out and thought, let's make a baby?
We were just like, should we just see? See what happens.
So we all know how that night ended.
We were like, let's just see what happens. And then
were you drunk?
Yeah, of course we were. Of course we were. But then it was the best thing that we did. And
that's a crazy, crazy way of making a baby, by the way.
It is.
I like it, though.
Also great. Great. Great way of doing it. Yeah, we just thought we'd see what happened. Obviously, the inevitable. It worked.
Baby.
Yeah, it worked.
That's nice. That's nice. So glad that worked out for you.
But just, it's such a different experience. And it's such an... I've always imagined success to me, in my eyes, is having a family.
Really? I never felt that way.
But that's fine.
But like, now I think I do. But yeah. I'm saying when I was younger, and I'm guessing when you were young, you may have felt the same as I did, of money, fame. Well, I wouldn't say fame, but like you had lovable rogues.
I think, yeah. I think because I did that so young, in my eyes, my next thing that I saw as success was just like, I always imagined success like, oh, when I'm older, I'd have a nice house, like a nice car, you know, a family, like going home from whatever job I had. As long as I had that, that felt to me like, as long as I've got family, that's all that matters, because I've just always had family around. That to me was just, I don't know, that's success to me. And I have that now. So it is one of those things for me where jobs do come through where I'm like, oh, is it worth leaving the house for this? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But for the brands who want to work with Sunny, he will leave the house.
Well, I will leave the house. Of course I will leave the house. I mean, look, listen, the reason why I was so excited when I first met HLD and Cherish and Tom and you was because I had my radio job. My radio job was there. To me, how the industry goes now, TV jobs, they come about, but they're not there for everyone, right? So you've got to do something else. So what is it? And I know, and everyone else knows, and I know you discuss it a lot, digital world is rapidly taking over what TV is.
They say it's going to be worth like $1 trillion next year.
Yeah, and I believe it because, you know, although we're all watching, for instance, I'm a Celeb or this, that, whatever, it's like, the kids aren't watching that. They're watching YouTube and they're doing this and they're streaming, whatever. There was something that excited me about you guys that I thought, you are in this world and I want to be in that. And, you know, since joining you, I mean, God, we've signed a Pampers deal.
And that's not
for adult nappies.
Luckily. But, you know, we are open to it should you need that in the future.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely.
I think, like I said, it's something that we were really excited about signing you as well, because like I said, we'd never had a radio DJ before and it was a different way of commercializing. And I have to say Global are great as well as like part of their commercial team.
Absolutely, yeah.
And how I know your direct managers pitch you out is probably very different to how it would have been a little while ago, because now it's like you're a dadfluencer almost.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a video of you and your daughter that did go viral, didn't there?
Yeah, it was pretty mad.
Yeah, it was you two together, but...
There's certain moments when you got a little one and you're like, oh, you're being cute today. So I might just like film, you know, it wasn't even to put up online. It was just, she was being so cute. And I was like, can I have a cuddle? And she would cuddle me. So I thought, oh, let me film it and see if she does it again. So I said, oh, can I have a hug? I think I said to her in the video. And she just, you know, I think she was 9 months at the time. And she just put her arms out to me and she just squeezed me. And it was like, I'm so pleased I captured it. But I didn't capture it to put it up online. And then I thought, oh, that's quite a cute video. Let's just put it up online. And it went mental. I'm still getting like likes on it now. It went on Loose Women.
Yeah, I remember seeing it on Loose Women.
Yeah.
And I think it was because Grace was maybe on the panel that day too. And I was actually there and I was like, oh, look, there's Sunny.
Yeah. And it was just, I think definitely my, what I put out online has changed. And I'm not great at putting stuff out online. I'm not. And I know I'm not. And
I actually think you're actually pretty good.
Yeah, but I'm good because I live with someone who does that for a living.
Yes.
But I actually don't, I could do more and I know I could. But the things that I put out now are just like, oh, that's cute. Or I want to show people what I'm proud of,
you know,
but I guess that's Instagram anyway, isn't it? And we get to a whole conversation about that. But
I think that kind of leads me into your podcast, because people really invest in you and Danielle's life, you know, creating a family together. And it's, I think people really invest in, especially digital, of people when they know that person. And like, you already have this really intimate medium, and now you're going onto social media and you're letting people into your home life. So we started this year, Love Versus the List.
Yeah.
Let's discuss that podcast and the fact that it really took off. It's done really, really well. And it's just, how am I going to summarize it? It's you two moaning each other really a little bit, or Danielle moaning at you.
Well, it feels like more Danielle moaning at me.
I really enjoy it. And I like to share those clips with people and be like, see, you're the issue.
Yeah. Well, this is it. And we believe that everyone in a relationship has a list on each other, you know, and they're not like deal breakers. They're just little things that when you live with someone that just annoy you, like, you know, I moaned at Danielle for leaving her slippers. She just leaves them in front of doors, or she leaves the fridge open sometimes. It's a little thing.
She's the fridge open.
Sometimes she leaves the fridge open. She left the fridge open, right? It's the other day. It wasn't long enough for it to beep.
Right.
But I was like, Danielle, you left the fridge open. Fine. She went to do something else. I'm like, Danielle, you've left the fridge open again. The next day she comes at me and she's like, this chicken, it's frozen in the fridge. And I'm like, well, yeah, because you keep leaving the freaking door open. And what happens is that it overcompensates and it starts freezing it. I think. I'm not too sure.
I'm actually not sure if that's true.
In my head, that makes sense. But we all have these things.
Yours is too cold.
maybe I need to set it up a bit.
No, you just lower it down. It's too high. Yeah. So the other day, I froze everything too. And I was like, who the fuck's been touching my fridge? And then I was like, God, everything's frozen. I can't eat anything. I was defrosting like my milkshake. I was like,
oh.
I was really upset about it.
That would upset me, actually.
Yeah, I was upset. And I was literally like defrosting it for ages and then it was off. Oh. Because you can't defrost a milkshake like that.
You can't. No. You shouldn't.
No.
It's not recommended.
Well, I had a bit of...
Well, look, that's the thing. That's why we did the podcast, because we were like, everyone's got it.
Mm.
We're not doing anything groundbreaking, but actually, isn't it nice to have a little escape? Isn't it nice to listen to someone that moans about their partner as much as you moan about yours? Like, it's just... It's therapy for us, if anything. She mentioned stuff about me. She's like, oh, you don't do this, you don't do that. I'll tell you what, when I get home, I make sure I bloody do it. And then suddenly our relationship's changed. I'll tell you what, give it a year, she'll have nothing to moan about.
What are we going to change the podcast
And then
name?
I think we change it to, we just break love. All those down, and then suddenly I start doing them again. What's he like?
Well, what's he like? He's gone back to a typical man.
Yeah, exactly.
So I asked you before you got here for five questions to ask me.
Yeah.
Did you do it?
I have, yeah. But I almost want like a detailed answer. I don't want to be too quick fired, because I'd actually genuinely like to know.
Okay, fine.
Okay. So I want to know your best manager moment to date, which could be obviously anything, as big or as little.
I have two. One from when I worked at a different management
before
I started my own, and one now.
Yeah.
So the one before was I put Demi Rose, when I used to manage Demi Rose for S66 management, doesn't exist anymore. On the biggest billboard in Times Square for her PLT deal. And I was like 21.
Yeah.
And I was just so excited.
Yeah.
And that I always remember being like a, ooh. And I remember I put that in the contract. So it felt like an even bigger deal.
Yeah, because you were that. That was you.
That was me. It was originally part of the deal. And I was like, I want that. And I remember being really cocky about it too. I was like, yeah, I'm going to fucking do that. And I did. Yeah. And the second one was probably going to Australia last year with Grace for having her in the jungle.
Yeah.
And being the first TikToker to do it.
Yeah.
That for me was like a real like, this is where I know I want to be taking talent. This is my passion, is taking, breaking barriers of what we can achieve in this industry. And I met some incredible people, like other agencies. I learned so much. And I still have friends from like now, with like InterTalent, MC Saatchi, and, you know, hearing their experiences and their, like, I love learning.
Yeah.
And I found that whole experience, I found it really hard to watch it this year because I missed last year and I didn't realise I was going on one of the best trips of my life last year. And yeah, I learned so much. And even like working with the ITV team that high up, and it's just, it was incredible. So probably those two.
Okay.
I've had loads, by the way. It's just hard to pinpoint.
But the Grace thing, as an example, is when I spoke about us going on Brits Got Talent and like sort of paving the way for other people, that's what you did with Grace.
Yeah.
So you've actually stuck, like, you know, Angry Ginger this year going on to I'm a Celeb, who my mum hasn't got a clue about.
Yeah.
But does she like him? Yeah. But that's the difference of how TV's going now, isn't it? You know, to get new audience.
And I do think Grace kind of opened the doors for someone like Angry Ginger to come in.
For sure. But that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Which I think is really special. And I think Angry Ginger's great. And there's so many digital creators, by the way, who deserve to be in that position too.
Yeah.
So it was it was nice to achieve, especially because she was in the lineup to do it the year before and we didn't get it. So we went through the disappointment of not getting it.
Of course.
To getting
it. Right time though. Right time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'm going to obviously have to ask you about your worst. That you can talk about or do want to talk about. Like, as in like, not your worst as in, oh, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me in my career. But I guess the worst is in like, I wish it would have went that way. Like, that you can talk about.
When people have left, that it didn't feel like both parties wanted to leave. I find that difficult.
Okay.
I think there's never been anything that's horrific that's happened, like touch wood.
Yeah.
Not me. I think there's been time where people have left and I'm really sad. Or if I feel like I can't achieve for someone what I wanted, I take that quite harshly. I think, you know, everyone's got horror stories, but in terms of feeling my worst is those moments of being like, okay, what could I have done differently? Why has this not worked out? But they're all learning moments. So
fine.
There's some horror ones too that I couldn't ever tell you, but yeah.
Of course. Not Mike, anyway, am I right?
I'll tell you after.
If you were to be the top of your game in any other entertainment part of the industry, so whether it's an actor or a singer, what would it be? And who is doing what you would like to be doing now? Whether it be acting, singing, whatever.
It's actually not anything like that.
Okay.
I would love to be like the head honcho of like ITV. Like if I was to do, or I always, when I was younger, I wanted to be like the next Anna Wintour. So my goals were never to be in front of the camera, to be honest. It was always to be like the most powerful person in a room. And like Anna Wintour just embodied that. And then, you know, when you go like Kevin Ligo, when he walks into a room, everyone's like a bit scared and they know he's like the big boss. And I just think, yeah, like I've always wanted to have like big dick energy.
Yeah.
So I think probably I think now that's what I would do.
Okay.
I felt the power. I don't want to lose that.
No, don't lose it. God, keep it going for the rest of us.
I would hate to be like a reality TV star vibe. That's not me. And I think people think I would want that. No. Okay. I'm too cancelable. I just am.
Well, we'll see what gets cut out of this. And I'll let you know how cancelable you are. If you were to manage anyone that is like, I'm going to say like A-list and bring them into another world, who would it be and what would you make them do?
Oh, that's a good question. You know what? It's not like the obvious. I think I'd really want to do like Michelle Obama.
Okay.
And have her be the face of like a big fashion brand.
Yeah, but that's cool. Like, I think people would dig that.
Yeah, like I would love to like take someone really big in politics, like Kamala Harris.
Complete different world.
And take them into a different world as like this juxtaposition. And I actually think if they do something like that, people find them really like relatable. But I understand why they don't. But I think if I had to, like if that was like the scenario, that's what I would do.
Okay.
Because I just think it'd be so iconic. Like, you know, you have Michelle Obama wearing MAC lipstick range.
That would be cool.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, or like
presidential
Shadow
Ruby Red.
Skims.
Yeah, like presidential Ruby Red. Like something like that, you know, something that is just so out of the box.
Yeah.
That's what I always have wanted to do is like create different opportunities that people don't feel like make sense until it happens.
Right. And then the obvious question, I always think you've always got to have goals for the next year. What's your bucket list to tick off next year that you haven't already done? Whether it be for anyone that you manage?
It doesn't matter who it is, I guess, for management, because I really want to help co-produce shows with my talent.
Okay.
And whether that's anyone on the agency, I think I would love to be part of that. We produce it together with one team, because I think I'm really big believer in that. That's what I want to start doing, is putting more into the IP of what our talent are doing and be part of those journeys. And it's a learning experience. I've never done it.
Okay.
We'd love to do that. I think that would be really cool. I also want to break America, but I think I've still got a little while to go. I don't think that'll be a next year thing either.
Oh, you never know.
Never know.
Put this guy on somewhere.
There we go. Do you know what? Our favourite British lovable rogue. And with that...
Well, that was stinky, wasn't it?
I know, I loved it. And with that, I'm going to end the podcast. Thank you so much for coming on. I've so enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, do we have to finish?
We have to.
You're not paying your electricity bills. Can we not keep them on for an extra long?
Well, thank you for coming
Thanks
on.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure. Thanks for the call up. And if you ever need someone again,
absolutely.
I'm
Come
here.
Next year, I want to like, let's go over us again and see where we're at.
Wow. Thank you.
Deal. If you like this episode, please don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. hit the bell, get the notifications, and I'll see you next week. Thank you.
Make sure you hit the bell. Thank 5 you. Stars or Hannah will troll you.
Thank you so much for watching this episode of Managed. If you loved watching, please make sure you're following us so you can receive updates on our next episode. I'll see you next week.